Stay up to date with the best of the BMJ's journalism in our free daily newsletter. From pandemics to physician associates, from cancer to climate change, our team of award-winning journalists hand-selects the latest articles for you each day. The BMJ Today allows you to keep abreast of the most interesting and pressing new content being published on bmj.com. Catch up quickly on the medical news that matters. Sign up at bmj.com/today.
Hi everybody, welcome to this episode of the Heart Podcast. It's James Rudd, the digital media editor here at Heart. Today I'm joined by repeat guest Professor Mark Dweck from the University of Edinburgh. Mark is a world expert in cardiovascular imaging, coronary artery imaging and valvular imaging, with particular interests in CT and PET. And he's recently written an editorial in Heart with co-author Craig Bamforth from the same institution, which is all about the use of thoracic aortic calcification, picked up incidentally on chest imaging studies, and how and why and where and whether this should be used for helping us to refine cardiovascular risk. We have a good discussion about the editorial and the accompanying paper, and then we also go off into thinking about the future and how these tests and results might be integrated into clinical guidelines after appropriate trials. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks so much for joining me, Professor Dweck. It's a great pleasure to see you again on the podcast. Maybe we can just start off by having you introduce yourself for the Heart Podcast audience. Who are you? Where do you work? And what do you do there?
Thanks, James. It's a great pleasure to be back. So I'm Professor Mark Dweck. I'm an academic cardiologist based in Edinburgh, and my research interests are around imaging, essentially, multimodality imaging, mainly focused on heart valve disease, atherosclerosis, and cardiomyopathy.
And you've recently written an illuminating editorial with first author Craig Bamforth, also from the University of Edinburgh, which is all about future applications of incidental detection of thoracic and coronary calcium for atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease events prediction, which is a bit of a mouthful. But in essence, it's a nice editorial about a paper that focused, rather than looking at coronary artery calcium score as a sort of primary measure, they also measured thoracic artery calcium score. And I thought it'd be useful to get you on the podcast to talk about that. But maybe even before we dive into the imaging aspects of this paper and editorial, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the limitations of just using really simple risk factor scoring mechanisms for predicting patients who are going to have heart attacks and strokes. What's the problem with just looking at age, gender, et cetera?
Well, that is the current approach. And it's been the approach for a while, and it does a pretty good job. It does a pretty good job at a kind of population level. I guess when you're looking at individual risk, you know, certainly a lot of the patients that come in with their first presentation of a myocardial infarction don't necessarily have high risk scores, and vice versa. There's plenty of people with very high risk scores that never have myocardial infarction. So it's an imperfect tool on an individual basis. It works pretty well at a population level. Of course, it's never, ever been tested in a randomized controlled trial. So we've got no evidence from, you know, randomized trials to show that this is an effective thing to do. But it's something that we've just done and seems sensible. With the advent now of novel imaging techniques, we have the opportunity to think about other ways of directing preventative therapies. And so, you know, there's an alternative potentially. And there are trials around the world, including the Scott Heart 2 trial, looking at, you know, should we guide prevention with risk scores or with imaging?
And that brings us on nicely to talk about this paper. And let's first of all just discuss a little bit about coronary artery calcium and calcification scoring, which I think is in the guidelines. Is that correct for a sort of intermediate risk patients?
Yeah, so we can use calcium scoring to refine risk prediction when the risk score saying you're intermediate, it's not clear whether you're high risk or low risk. And so that's in the guidelines. And, you know, essentially this is a very simple approach. You know, it's been around a long time, and CT is very good at picking up calcification and, you know, pretty good at quantifying calcification. And so we can get a burden. If we measure how much calcium in the coronary arteries or indeed in the thoracic aorta. We get an assessment of the burden of atherosclerosis in those areas. And it's, you know, if you're probably measuring the wrong type of plaque, if we want to get into it, because, you know, the calcific plaques themselves are probably not the plaques that are going to rupture and cause events. They're more stable plaques. But if you've got more in the way of calcific plaques, then you've probably got more in the way of non-calcific plaque and you know, more unstable plaque phenotypes. And therefore, it predicts risk by basically giving us an assessment of plaque burden.
And as you were hinting before, there are some trials, aren't there, of coronary artery calcium scoring and long-term studies like the MESA study, which is, I think, used here in this paper, which have shown that it is useful over and above traditional risk factor scoring. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a very powerful way of actually predicting future risk of cardiovascular events. And you and I have spent a long time trying to develop kind of more sophisticated methods, and it's actually quite hard to beat. It's difficult to beat the calcium. it's a powerful thing. I think there are ways of doing it in a slightly better way now, but you know, in the context of this paper, this is an opportunistic moment where we can use this information to refine risk prediction in these patients. And you know, I think it's a very interesting topic and paper.
So let's talk a little bit about the paper on which you wrote the editorial. Maybe we can perhaps even set the scene. What were they actually trying to do in this paper in terms of thoracic aortic calcification? Where were they measuring it? What sort of imaging were they using to measure it? It was non-cardiac scans, is that right?
Yeah, so this is not like the kind of ideal thing to use, but these are non-cardiac CT scans where done for another reason, not specifically to assess the coronary arteries, but the coronary arteries are there in the field of view, and therefore we can, you know, potentially quantify calcification in those areas. There's some limitations because if it's a non-cardiac scan, it's not gated, there might be a bit more motion. But you know, despite those limitations, you can do a pretty good job of assessing the burden. They're looking in the thoracic aorta, and they're looking, you know, in the coronary vasculature. So those are the two areas that they've looked at. There's a bit of data, you know, that there is atherosclerosis is a systemic process. It affects all the arteries. But when we're thinking about different types of events, then, you know, if you think about myocardial infarction, it probably makes more sense to look in the coronary arteries than in the legs, for example. And there's a bit of data suggesting that if you were interested in stroke, maybe it's more beneficial to look in the aorta than it is in the coronary artery. So this is the background, and they're making use of this opportunistic moment to look at the atherosclerotic burden. And then, you know, what's quite I like about it is that they've looked in these two territories and combined and compared the different information that these two separate assessments provide.
And just, I've just got the paper in front of me. Yeah, they looked at in the ascending aorta. They also looked at the arch of the aorta, which is sometimes not reported in other papers, and then the descending aorta to come up with a kind of burden of calcification outside of the coronary arteries. And these are mainly people undergoing imaging of the chest for lung disease, as you say, rather than any cardiac issues.
Stay up to date with the best of the BMJ's journalism in our free daily newsletter. From pandemics to physician associates, from cancer to climate change, our team of award-winning journalists hand-select the latest articles for you each day. The BMJ Today allows you to keep abreast of the most interesting and pressing new content being published on bmj.com. Catch up quickly on the medical news that matters. Sign up at bmj.com/today.
Maybe we can just start by summarizing the key findings of the Ichikawa study regarding their sort of primary results.
Yeah, so, I mean, essentially, they found that both the thoracic and the coronary calcification that they measured were associated with cardiovascular events, independently associated with cardiovascular events. But the coronary artery calcium score was a bit more powerful than the assessment of the thoracic score. Although the thoracic assessment did have some added value in sort of lower risk individuals. So yeah, so there, again, it comes back to, you know, they're both prognostic. They're both, atherosclerosis is systemic. If you measure it in one area, then it tells you something about the systemic process. But if you can, but there is a regionality to it as well. And so, so that's, you know, what their data kind of confirmed.
Yeah, it was a very interesting study, and I enjoyed reading it. Did they also look to, we should have said maybe at the beginning, this was a prospective study as part of the MESA trials. They did have outcome data over quite a number of years, and this is how they were able to test the predictive power of both of these tests. But they also looked at stroke, didn't they, which I think is interesting and not something that's often reported. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so interestingly, when it came to stroke, there weren't those kind of regional differences, were kind of lost. The coronary calcium and the thoracic calcium seem to offer kind of similar assessment of stroke risk. So that's interesting. There is a bit of data that, as I said, that suggests that maybe thoracic assessments might be better than the coronaries. Although in those studies, as you mentioned, they largely focus on the ascending aorta. So it's an interesting one to kind of tease out. But you know, I think it probably makes sense. Overall, you know, a lot of the cardiovascular events are going to be myocardial infarction driven by what's happening in the coronaries, and there the coronary calcium, the burden of coronary atherosclerosis, you know, offers the best prediction. But when it comes to stroke, then the results were similar.
And what would you say are the, if we wanted to implement this and maybe get this into the guidelines, I don't think it is at the moment, is it? I don't think there's any burden upon radiologists or cardiologists reporting these scans to necessarily report the degree of thoracic aortic calcification. Where do you think the challenges still lie that we need to think about before taking this a step further now that we've got this interesting data?
Yeah, I think it's about persuading people of the value of this approach. I think it needs more observational data such as this to kind of really reinforce the message. But ultimately, it's about getting systems in place of what you do, how you deal with it, how you communicate the information that these scans provide. And then I think crucially, how you link that to an action in terms of treatment, because it's all very well saying, well, there's coronary calcification, but I think some sort of assessment that says we would recommend, for example, a statin and aspirin, you know, that's where you're going to actually have a kind of preventative impact. I mean, I think just reporting it, putting it out in the ether and hoping someone does something is less likely to be effective compared to an approach where you link the imaging finding to a treatment. And you know, there are questions. So, you know, for example, I mean, it's going to give you a rough estimate of how much atherosclerosis you have, you know, and so... So what are the thresholds that we should use? What's the threshold to say you should be on a statin in an elderly smoker?
Right. You know?
And what's the threshold that then says, oh, well, you should be on a statin and you should be on an aspirin because, you know, we think the preventative beneficial effects outweigh the risk of bleeding. You know, those kind of things, I think, remain a bit unknown. And even in the centers that are reporting this as standard, you know, probably different centers have different approaches to this. So I think future research should focus on those specific kind of questions. And, you know, how do we decide who should get the preventative therapies? I mean, you're going to recommend to all of them, they should stop smoking if they're a smoker, you know, healthy diet, blah, blah, blah. But actually, you know, aspirin, statin, how do we decide who should get those things?
Yeah. And I guess we, as you suggest in your piece, RCT is going to be the way forward. And you mentioned earlier on that your interest particularly extends to valve disease as well and calcification of valves. Is there anything you want to talk about there when in terms of potential risk reduction or crosstalk with the coronaries between valve calcification, coronary calcification, anything else that you think people would be interested to learn about?
Yeah, I mean, so no, I'm very interested in aortic stenosis and a concern that everyone has had over the last few years is that, you know, the traditional way of picking up aortic stenosis is the, you know, the random listen to the heart as part of some form of medical interface. But, you know, post-COVID, we're probably examining patients less. There's less face-to-face contact with GPs, et cetera, and so that opportunistic detection of heart valve disease has become much less efficient. And so I think we really need to think about other ways of picking up heart valve disease. And this, again, is another way to do that, because if you detect calcium on the aortic valve, that's a good sign that, people have calcific aortic valve disease. And again, there's questions, how much calcium do you need for it to be aortic stenosis rather than sclerosis, et cetera, but, you know, notwithstanding those, that detail, the principle of finding calcium in the valve and then, you know, not ignoring it, but reporting it so we can pick up patients with aortic stenosis, I think is an important one, and one that we should look at. You know, to answer your other question, the link between bowel disease and coronary disease, there's a very strong link. If you look at calcium scoring in patients with aortic stenosis, more than 90% have coronary calcification. So, you know, we're talking about both obstructive plaque and non-obstructive plaque, but they have atherosclerosis. And so so that's interesting. If you then think about, okay, well, you know, there's lots of data out there saying that patients with aortic stenosis have an adverse prognosis. Even people with aortic sclerosis, you know, the very mild stage. And, you know, we wrote a paper with Michelle Williams recently, basically showing that a lot of that risk is attributable to the coronary disease. As soon as you put the coronary calcification into the model, actually that increased risk goes away.
Oh, is that right? Interesting. Okay.
So as we get, you know, I think particularly as we get into an era of where we're trying to put TAVI into kind of lower and lower risk patients, and the rationale as well, they've got an adverse prognosis. You know, we can fix that with the TAVI. Actually, we should pause and think, well, is that prognosis actually related to the valve, or is it related to the coronaries? And, you know, think critically about that, the causality of any association.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's plenty to think about. And we didn't even touch on the AI automatically reporting, you know, valvular calcification, coronary artery calcification on these non-gated chest scans, which I'm sure is already out there, I'm sure, and is going to come even more into our practice. And as you say, it's not always clear exactly what to do in every patient in the absence of any good trial data. So hopefully we can address that. Perfect. Well, I want to thank you very much once again, Professor Dweck, for joining me today. It's been really good to catch up with you. And I will put your contact details in the show notes so people can track you down and find you and see all the interesting things you're doing with coronary artery disease, valvular heart disease, PET, CT, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, thanks once again for your time.
Thanks, James. Great pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Stay up to date with the best of the BMJ's journalism in our free daily newsletter. From pandemics to physician associates, from cancer to climate change, our team of award-winning journalists hand-selects the latest articles for you each day. The BMJ Today allows you to keep abreast of the most interesting and pressing new content being published on bmj.com. Catch up quickly on the medical news that matters. Sign up at bmj.com/today.